Hello and welcome to MediCall episode 229. I'm Corey and here's Daryl.
Yo.
Yo. Hey, we got Crimson Vow. We got spoilers. You know what to do. We're going to get some spoilers. before we get into it, our wonderful sponsor, manatraders.com, has a promo code for you to use. Card Knock Life Podcast, all one word, for 14% off your first 3 months at checkout. But we've got a lot of spoilers to go through, so let's jump right in. Plan today is, let's look at these things. We used to do a picks game. I just don't think it's possible to keep up with the blistering speed that these cards released anymore.
Too fast.
But it was like, by the time we got to like the last two colors, it was like a week and a half after the set was released, and like our questions were already answered. Like, which card was going to see play, it was already answered because we had like 2 weeks of results posted. So,
And that was with us like doing weekly podcasts. Yeah. So, like, having moved to our biweekly schedule, but there may be like more stuff coming because now real paper magic is a thing now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
SCGCon had the invitational.
So let's keep it simple. This is a powerful set. I've been digging into these guys, and they're exciting. Not only is the theme cool and the realm is cool. I love Innistrad. The cards are strong. I think we're visiting, you know, we're increasing on the power creep a little more here, notching it up a bit.
I don't know. I'm seeing it, man. So
you're not seeing maybe it.
I'm not seeing it totally. So maybe I'm just, you know, old man yells at cloud. So maybe you can walk me through it as we kind of go here.
Well, good, because I think that makes for some good podcasts is when we disagree, right? So what we'll do is we'll keep it simple. We're going to do big deal or no deal. And, you know, a perfectly fine answer, too, is eh. So it could just be a card. But
The most mediocre of deals.
The most mediocre of deals. Like, it's just a card. It's going to be a role player. It'll see play. But eh, it's just okay, you know. So I'll just throw out there right now, like, it's kind of similar to like Larwyn. Like, this is a very tribal centric set. There's a lot of vampires. There's a lot of humans in here that have got me excited for, particularly like historic tribes and things like that. And I won't be able to put a finger on specifically like how these are going to play in because the tribal options are just so like diverse. But I think that there's some meat here for tribal options, but obviously that doesn't excite everybody. Like, you know, when you're looking at these vampires, for example, it's like, oh yeah, cool, vampires are neat and vampires are a tribe. But like, as a card, like, you know, in a vacuum, it's like, okay, that card's just eh. But big deal for vampires, maybe. So that's something to keep in mind. But let's get started.
All right,
and I'm starting at the bottom. Yeah, so are you. Okay, so our unofficial sponsor, by the way, Scryfall.com. Thank God for Scryfall because they do a fantastic job of organizing all this stuff. Thalia, Guardian of Thraven, reprint in this set. And it is only notable really for Standard because it's already a part of Historic. But first of all, just real quick tangent here. Daryl, what do you think of this art?
I like it.
Particularly, I like this alternate frame, this black and white sketch frame. I think it's really cool.
I actually like the regular. I'm kind of medium on the black and white sketch frame.
Oh, yeah. The regular art looks very Innistrad to me, and you can, like, see the zombie hands at the window in the background. I love that. But the sketch art, oh, man, I love that so much. There's just so many promo versions of Thalia that it's like, where does this one fit in? It's kind of like the basic land problem where it's like they can just reprint promo basic lands up the wazoo and, like, you know, how many do you really need? So, anyways,
yeah.
Not too important, but that'll probably see play in Standard. It's a good card. this is a 4-mana Planeswalker, so I figured it's worth looking at. Sorin the Mirthless, 2BB for 4 loyalty Planeswalker, +1, look at the top card of your library. You may reveal that card and put it in your hand. If you do, you lose life equal to its mana value. -2, create a 2/3 black vampire creature token with flying and lifelink, almost a Nighthawk. And -7, Sorin the Mirthless deals 13 damage to any target, and you gain 13 life.
Probably medium. Like, the +1 being, like, optional Dark Confidant, so, like, if you're at low life and you don't want to draw the cards, if you hit, like, an expensive card in your deck, that's cool.
Yeah.
Most of the time... But yeah. Like oftentimes decks that want this effect.
Daryl.
You want to play Earth?
So you're really if you're yawning about this guy. Let me just put it this way. This guy is very much the planeswalker trope in the like create a dude, card advantage, and then some ultimate that like essentially kills someone. But the big difference is like that draw card is a plus, and you don't see that a lot except for on a card named Teferi, who is very good in all formats. So I think there's something here. 4 mana. I mean, this guy, like, I want to play this in, like, a historic, like, Jund-style deck. I think there's something there for him.
You know. I don't think this is the cut modern. I think this is great in standard. I think it's playable in historic, but doesn't make the cut the mustard for modern here.
Yeah, but there's just a lot of options at 4 mana Planeswalker. So he's for me, but I do like him a lot, and I'm definitely going to try him. So anyways, there's that. And as I go, stop me if I miss anything, by the way. Dorothea, Vengeful Victim, white blue for a 4/4 flying. When it attacks or blocks, sacrifice it at end of combat. But it has disturb, 1 white blue. And when you play it for its disturb cost, it becomes an enchantment aura. It's really hard to talk about these disturb cards. They're like a mouthful. So far with me, it's like a one-time use 4/4, right? And then out of the graveyard, you can pay 1 white blue, an enchantment aura. Enchanted creature has, whenever this creature attacks, create a 4/4 white spirit creature token with flying that's tapped and attacking. Sacrifice that token at end of combat. If Dorothea's retribution will be put into a graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead.
So it's unfortunate that this is a spirit, because I actually mentally had already equated this to like the angel that showed up when the Geist of St. Traft would attack.
Yeah.
Like from original Innistrad. And then it gives your creature like the Geist of St. Traft treatment. But unfortunately, this is not an angel, so it's not that exactly. But it could have been very nice tie-in. I could see playing this in exactly Boggles if you did some sort of like blue-white, maybe green auras deck where you had a bunch of hexproof creatures. Like you could play this as an attacker, hit a 4-ball in, and then like you just have this Geist of St. Traft aura in your graveyard. But I don't know how good that is. So that's just my thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think this card's probably just bad, but it is really interesting, and it feels like a red card, right? It's like a Skizik type of creature to me, in that it's like just a big. Hard to defend against, you know, clock him over the head once, then it's gone. But then it has, like, some kind of, like, you know, as Skizik's tend to be printed these days, it's, like, comes back one more time to do it again type of effect. But, yeah, obviously... Yeah, obvious nostalgia for the Geist of St. Traft with the same mana cost and then does the thing, right? So, yeah, interesting card, but... It doesn't fit into spirits, which is really what I'm looking for with the spirits in this set. So probably not. I'm not going to see too much play.
Agree with that.
Overcharged Amalgam, 2 blue-blue for a 3/3 flash flying exploit. And for those who forgot, exploit wasn't used a whole ton, but exploit is when this creature enters the battlefield, you may sacrifice a creature. So then if you do that, counter target spell, activated ability, or triggered ability. So then you got a flash counter spell. That is a 3/3 flyer for 4 mana. It can exploit itself, keep in mind.
Yeah, so it's basically cost 1 mana more for disallow, but you could also get a 3/3 flyer if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. I think it's good.
I think it'll be good in standard. I think it'll be fine in historic. I don't think it'll see play in modern.
Yeah, same. I think it's going to be a big deal in standard, though. So that's where I'm going to put this one. I don't even know if it'll see play in historic, to be honest, except for maybe in some, like, fringy decks, but definitely in standard.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, this guy's cool. Voldaren Bloodcaster, 1 and a black for a 2/1 flying. When it or another non-token creature you control dies, create a blood token. A blood token is 1 tap. Discard a card, sacrifice the artifact, and draw a card. It rummages. And whenever you create a blood token, if you control 5 or more, you transform Voldaren Bloodcaster. So far, just to reiterate, that is a 2-mana 2/1 flyer that whenever a creature you control dies, you make a blood token. You get 5 of those, it turns into a 3/3 flyer. At the beginning of combat on your turn, up to 1 target blood token you control becomes a 2/2 bat, black bat token with flying and haste in addition to its other types. It gives it haste. I think that's like kind of a thing to like to solve problems in advance on like Arena when you can't remember which blood token just entered the battlefield that turn because it doesn't organize them very well.
Yep.
So this guy I think is really cool, actually. I like this one a lot. The mana cost is like super value, like 1 in a black for a 2/1 flyer is really powerful already, and then to have this upside where it's like, oh yeah, this is just like this huge value engine too, beyond being aggressive. It reminds me of that 4-mana vampire from Innistrad that would flip over. Do you remember that guy, Keeper of the Bloodline or something?
Yeah, Bloodline Keeper. Yeah.
Bloodline Keeper. Yeah, that guy. I mean, obviously a little different, but flip a vampire.
Yeah, I mean, this is aggressively costed. It's kind of good anti-wrath protection because it lets you get away from like the problem that you'll have with your aggro deck that if you go like 1-drop, 2-drop, 3-drop, and they wrath you, you get 3 blood tokens, and then if you start to flood out, you can like loot the bad cards away, like loot your lands away and stuff.
Now, Historic has Cauldron Familiar Food as like one of the biggest mid-range decks. And I'm wondering if this guy goes in there.
I mean, yeah, because then you basically get a food and a rummage. And then the rummages can, like, flip this guy and make bats.
Yeah.
Ugh, yeah. That's pretty gross.
Yeah, no, it's not. I think it's worth it's not literally a food, which is not helpful in some cases, but it's a sacrifice for Korvold or the dragon guys.
And it's an artifact, too. So, like, if you have artifact matter synergies.
Mm. But, yeah, generally looting is just good. Or rummaging is just good. This is an efficient way to get cards in your graveyard. So, I think this guy is a big deal.
I think it's a pretty big deal. I don't think you'll see play modern, but pretty big deal otherwise, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Savior of Olenbach, 1WW for a 1/2 training. Whenever this creature attacks with another creature with greater power, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. Basically like reverse of Mentor. Whenever Savior of Olenbach trains, exile up to 1 other target creature from the battlefield or creature card from a graveyard. When Olenbach leaves the battlefield, put the exiled cards onto the battlefield under their owner's control. This is like riffing on a lot of white creature tropes. It can do a lot of things. It's defensive and offensive. Like, it can put your own creatures from the battlefield back into play, can't it?
Well, all I was thinking about is it's just like it's like a weird reanimator card.
Yeah. Exactly.
Creature card from a graveyard?
Yeah.
So, like, if you dump like big giant knuckleheads in your graveyard and then use this guy to like trigger the train, put it underneath this guy, kill it or bounce it, and put your giant fatty in play.
That's really awkward though. Like, you have to have like, you have to go wide and be reanimator at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
How does that work?
I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying that like this is a thing that you could have to be attentive for. Like, this could be a thing that happens where, like, if there's a card that just, like, makes a random 2/2 token or something along the way that's playable in any shape or form, like Burn Down the House, I think, makes 2/2 devils. If they're 1/1s, ignore this. But if they're 2/2s, it's great. But, like, anything that just makes, like, a random 2/2 token that can get into play before this guy basically gives you the ability to, like, do some reanimator shenanigans.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely weird, that's for sure. And it's super powerful in the right circumstances, but I think the setup requirements are just too high for it. So I'm going to say no deal.
Yeah, I'm going to say eh. It's very interesting. It has weird niche applications. If it's possible, people will certainly figure out how to break this card.
Yeah. All right, this next one, I imagine we're both big deal on. Dig Up is a green mana for basically a land tax. Search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, and put it in your hand, then shuffle. I like how it just says shuffle and no longer shuffle your library. It's a little redundant. But it also has cleave, which is a new mechanic. One black, black, green. You may cast this card for its cleave cost. If you do, remove the words in square brackets. When I saw this, I thought it was like a joke, but I do like it now. It's really grown on me. So the cards that are in brackets are basic land and reveal it, which means that if you pay one black, black, green, it says search your library for a card, put it into your hand, then shuffle.
Yeah, you're playing Diabolic Tutor.
Yeah.
So, like, this is just another version of Kicker, basically.
Basically,
A new way to do it, right? Like, it's functionally, like, it looks pretty similar to Overload. Overload replaces, like, each instance of target with all or each or whatever. So, it's, like, same deal. So, this is a card that I will definitely see seeing playing a ton of play in Standard. Because it's, like, a good, like... So, like, oh, what's the stupid card from Aether Revolt? The one that made energy.
Aether something or other. The one, yeah, made energy. I know what you're talking about.
Like green.
Attune.
Attune with Aether, yeah.
Yeah.
You can search your deck for a basic land, make 2 energy. So, like, you don't get extra bonus payoff that you can use immediately. But, like, Lay of the Land is just a fine card to, like, let you cheat on lands in your deck. And then, like, as you no longer need Lay of the Land, when you draw this card, it's Diabolic Tutor. So, Diabolic Tutor is not a great card on rate, but, like, having Diabolic Tutor that you can, like, also use to, like, play early game and tutor up your lands to set up your, like, long game as a mid-range deck,
mm-hmm.
Seems like something I'm interested in.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean this goes in like in the Sultai ramp decks in Historic. This will certainly find a home in Standard. It's like the perfect pivot card because the 4 mana Diabolic Tutor wants to be exactly what this card is when it's not, you know, when it has that other option, meaning that like when it's like, okay, I am like hurting for lands. This is the last card I want to see. This 4 mana like search for a card. It's just so slow. Like I can't imagine like having 4 mana right now that I'm like just starved for resources. This card like is like, oh, by the way, I can also just solve that problem for you too. Like let's just get you the basic lands you need. So it's like it does two completely different things that that you know work for two completely different phases of the game. So I think that's really important.
Yeah, that modality is going to make it see a big deal in Standard, a big deal in Historic. And we might see some fringe play in Modern. But, like, I mean, I will cop to this for, like, the Commander side of me. Everyone plays Demonic Tutor in their black deck, whatever.
Yeah.
I can't tell you the number of times that I've casted Demonic Tutor on turn 2 to go get Command Tower.
Oh, sure.
Just, like, I need a land... I'm going to get any land. I might as well make it one of the next on my colors. But I've Demonic Tutored for Command Tower more than almost any other card in any of my Commander decks. Full stock.
Yep.
So,
like, yeah, easy.
Being able to have a tutor that also searches for a land in Commander, like, at a cheaper cost is just very good.
Yeah, this may be an auto-include in decks that have access to green-black.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jumping ahead, there's a lot of the dual lands, the rare dual lands coming up.
We completed the rare dual land cycle. That's a big deal for Standard.
Like, yeah, the full art lands are excellent, let me just say.
Yep.
And yep. Even the yep. non-full art, the basic land arts are excellent. I love those. Like the mountain is like one of the coolest mountains I've ever seen. Do you see that?
Yeah.
With the dope. Like the blood moon behind the cliff. Oh man, I love that so much.
For sure.
Okay. All right, so then we got a couple of commons and things. There's an extended art dig up out there for those of you that want to pimp out your EDH deck. I'm sure this is going to be a hot commodity. All right, by invitation only. This is really interesting. 3 white for a sorcery. Choose a number between 0 and 13. Each player sacrifices that many creatures. Huh. We've never seen anything like this before.
I mean, it's just Wrath of God.
It is, right? But when is it not Wrath of God? Like, what does it do that Wrath of God doesn't do?
It kills indestructible creatures.
What's that?
Kills indestructible creatures.
Okay. Kills indestructible creatures. And two, like, if you have more creatures than your opponent, you keep your best one, and they lose all their creatures. It's a one-sided Wrath, right?
Yeah. So, like, if you have more creatures than your opponent, you can do that, absolutely.
But, like, you've got to set up for, like, a deck. You've got to design your deck so that you've got just a ton of tokens, maybe like a big token generator creature, and then you've got a Wrath of God in the same deck, which is really awkward, but by invitation only kind of allows you to do that. Like, never would you play like Supreme Verdict and that green ooze generator dude, that mythic that I can't think of the name, you know?
Well, so like, let's look at it this way. Frequently, like, I'm going to go back to the standard where Wingmate Rock was the card, right?
Biogenic Ooze, that's what I'm thinking of, by the way.
Yeah. Wingmate Rock, Siege Rhino, that Khan's Tarkir standard era.
Yeah.
The mid-range decks that were basically Siege Rhino decks, or Abzan decks, would play the, like, 7-mana Abzan Sweeper in their sideboard. That, like, was, like, target one creature, kill all of the creatures but that one creature. And so, like, this is just, like, a 5-mana version of that. Because, like, if you were, like, in that standard, if you were up on Elspeth tokens and had a Siege Rhino, you could, like, buy Invitation only, wipe your opponent's board, keep your Siege Rhino attack. So, like, this is a similar feeling style card of, like, you get up on creatures, and you have one that's, like, big enough to, like, finish the game quickly. You just want this in the sideboard of your, like, mid-range deck to, like, be able to even the playing field, or, like, step on the throat if you're in that position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. I like this one. Yeah, like, remember that little kid Abzan? Little kid Abzan with, like, Lingering Souls and Gavinny Township and stuff like that back in Modern.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal. I don't think I'll see Modern play, but it's a big deal.
I mean, that deck was very fringe to begin with, but it was certainly cool.
Yeah.
There could be something for Pioneer. I haven't checked into that format recently, but I think Little Kid Abzan pieces exist in Pioneer. And basically that deck was just like, make a bunch of tokens, like have a bunch of value, and then spam Gavinny Township. Is that card Pioneer legal? I imagine so, right? Gavinny Township?
No.
No? Oh, shoot. Bummer. Okay. All right. Moving on. Jump up to Demonic Bargain. I'm surprised to see two tutors, like, you know, basically unrestricted tutors in this set. Demonic Bargain is 2 and a black for a sorcery. It's a rare. Exile the top 13 cards of your library, then search for a card, put in your hand, and shuffle. So it's kind of like fixed, quote unquote, Diabolic Tutor or Demonic Tutor.
It's more like fixed Demonic Consultation.
Yeah, Demonic Consultation, right? Yeah, it costs quite a bit more mana. It's probably the closest we're going to get to that in the Modern era. But for 3 mana, it's pretty powerful. I think this is the cheapest tutor access we've got and we've seen since, what? I mean, there's been some wishes, you know, back in like the Judgment time, back in Judgment that were like 3 mana, but I don't know. A little risky.
I like the design. It is very risky. But it's a good design. Like, it's very clean. It's like, you know, here's my bargain. I'm giving you a fifth of my life for you to give me exactly what I want, assuming you don't take it from that fifth of my life. Yeah. You know, like, it's...
Yep. Okay.
Good flavor. Good flavor. Pretty mediocre card.
It'll probably see play in some combo decks. But the bargain is like you could just exile all 4 copies of the target that you need and then just not win. But of course we've seen like Tybalt's Trickery decks all over historic where people play decks where it's like, you know, everyone's comfortable just being, hey, you know, I'm going to try to, you know, spin the wheel and see if I hit what I need to hit. And if I don't, then I just lose. And that's okay too. So if this is powerful enough to you know, be in the market for a 3-mana tutor, maybe it's okay that you can just, like, you know, screw yourself over sometimes and go for it other times. I don't know. But so for me, it's an eh, but I don't think it's bad.
I agree. We're in the same spot.
All right. Is there anything you want to circle back on? That was a pretty big jump to that one.
A couple of kind of expensive cards in there. I'm going ahead.
Okay.
From my perspective.
All right.
Sitting here right next to it is kind of cool. It's a 3/2 Death Touch exploit for 3.
Yeah. Zombies.
If you exploit a creature, or when it exploits a creature, target player loses 2 cards, or loses 2 life, draws 2 cards. So it's Sign in Blood with exploitable Sign in Blood, basically. So if you have a bunch of tokens lying around, you can exploit one for Sign in Blood. You can kill your opponent with it. If they're at 2, you can just exploit it on curve as like a lose 2, draw 2. Because that effect has been kind of in the 3 mana range for black. So kind of an on curve effect that if like cheap reanimation is a thing, like you could reanimate this draw 2. So.
Yeah, that card's sweet, and it's going to be a limited powerhouse, I tell you what. It's uncommon.
Be fantastic and limited. It's going to be okay in standard. If there's like a token deck, this will be useful. Mm-hmm. It's going to be bananas in EDH, and it's just not going to see play anywhere else.
Yeah, probably not. The exploit is interesting, and there's a lot of exploit stuff in this set, given that it's one of the mechanics in it. Which makes me wonder like how that can be used, because sacrificing your own creatures is something that you're often looking to do for value with, you know, other reasons. Like if you were to play Dominating Vampire, for example, which is another card to look at, 1 red for a 3/3 rare vampire. When it enters the battlefield, gain control of target creature with mana value less than or equal to the number of vampires you control until end of turn. Untap that creature, it gains haste until end of turn. So if you threaten their creatures, clock them with it, and then exploit it, that's, you know, obviously pretty strong. I don't know if that card is going to be good enough, but that kind of thing.
I actually kind of like that card in general. I mean, I guess if it doesn't die, because it's got to be... does it count itself? Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it does.
So, like, if it doesn't die, it's, like, a decent card in mind, because, like, all the threats are 1 and 2 mana.
Yeah. All the vampires, you mean?
No, all the threats, like Death Shadow, Raga.
Oh, got it. Yeah.
Like stealing, like, their threats. So all, like, the creatures are usually 1 and 2 mana, so you can usually, like, you'll get a Raga on trigger, or you'll get a 3/3 flyer or whatever. Like, I mean, but you still have to have a way to dispose of a 4-mana creature. So, not super exciting, but I could see it being like a fringe player in like people trying to like make vampires a thing.
Yeah. If there's, you know, if there's a good way to, there might be like one other like playable vampire, and just having like 2 play sets of vampires in your deck might be enough to like make this guy good enough. Then you can grab like Goyfs or something too, you know, whatever 2 mana guy.
The Vault or Faceless Haven.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, people will try and make fetch happen, I'm sure.
They will make fetch happen. All right. This one is interesting. Vampire's Vengeance. Vampire's Vengeance deals 2 damage to each non-vampire creature. Create a blood token. It's 2 and a red for an instant. This card's absolutely going to see play in standard just because it's an instant speed 2 damage spell.
Yeah.
But that's a big boon to get a blood token along with it. I mean, that seems quite unrelated, but I guess thematically it is a blood token.
I mean, people were playing Kozilek's Return because it was colorless. So is this good enough to replace Kozilek's Return to, like, get the upside of, like, get a free rummage alongside your Pyroclasm?
Yeah. I mean, if I'm playing Modern and I'm playing Mono Red Prowess, I absolutely want a blood token in that deck. That deck floods out and dies. So I think that's really good. Kozilek's Return certainly is not going to activate, you know, the... if you play a 5 mana Eldrazi or whatever the hell the other effect is. I can't remember. So that's irrelevant.
The whole point of that for Kozilek's Return is that it was colorless, so it killed Core Firewalker.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, that's a thing you can, like, consider. Is, like, You know, that's going to be in a Pyroclasm, Kozilek Return, Fire Spout sort of spot. You know, decks that are wanting to play Pyroclasm, you know, some of them are probably going to play Anger because it's 3 plus the Exile. But in situations where you'd rather not do that, like, this feels like almost like a Sweltering Suns to me, right? Like, you can pay the 3 mana to like, you're losing a card to deal 2 damage and have the rummage versus just being able to cycle Sweltering Suns for 3 mana.
Yeah.
So, like, that's kind of where I'm at with it. Is like, Sweltering Sun is a better version of this, it feels like, to me. For Modern.
Yeah, that's fair. There's a lot of options for a 3 mana, 2 damage to everything. Or 3 mana, 3 damage to everything. Even at instant speed, there's 2 damage spells that might be arguably more useful. So it's just like, now you just have lots of choices, depending on what the meta calls for. So this is interesting to just throw his hat in the ring, but probably not going to like usurp anything that already exists. So it's just a deal. It's just a deal for me. It's just an eh.
Yeah, it's the mediocre card, yeah.
Yeah.
Good, useful thematic card, not over the top. I know where I want to go next, but I don't know if you have anything before this card.
Go ahead.
Which is Path of Peril. 1 black for a sorcery that has cleave, 4 white-black. Destroy all creatures, and then the bracketed text is with mana value 2 or less.
Yeah, that card is sweet. I definitely want to look at that one. There's stuff before it, but let's go back to it. So yeah, Path of Peril, 3 mana, destroy all creatures with the convert mana cost 2 or less is, like, that would be a card we'd have to look at without the cleave, right? There's nothing that does that.
There's nothing that Modern.
Yeah, like, speaking of Modern, every creature costs 2 or less. Like, there are very few that cost 3 or more that get played, and if there are, you know, you can pick those off with 1-for-1 removal, but Path of Peril is like, you just, I mean, you probably rarely need to cleave this spell.
Yeah, you get it all for 3 mana most of the time.
Yeah, that's really good. Big deal.
I think this is a big deal personally, but
yeah. I feel like Damn, you know the card Damn? I feel like that card needed the cleave mechanic. This kind of reminds me of Damn.
It does.
Yeah. I wanted to go.
The cleave cost a little gentler than Damn with the only single white, but yeah.
Yeah. Wanted to look at Dr. John Stewart down here, which is really Dr. John Seward, but I can't look at that without thinking of Dr. John Stewart. Is 1 green white for, by the way, this guy's actual name in the set is Torrens Fist of the Angels, but as they do, they kind of reprint him with the Dracula theme. Dr. John Seward. Torrens Fist of the Angels is 1 green white for a 2/2 legendary creature human cleric with training. Whenever you cast a creature spell, create a 1/1 green and white human soldier creature token with training. This is like a monastery mentor for creatures, and I think that's really good. This guy's a big deal.
Yeah. It's kind of insane.
So at the very least, it's going to be Oliver Standard. Now, it is a legendary monastery mentor, which monastery mentor is not, right?
Yeah.
So that's a thing. So you can't play like a full 4 of these guys, I don't think. I'm looking at like maybe 2 or 3, but it is human.
That you play 4 of it.
You do?
Yeah. Like, if you're in the market for this, you want to draw it every game. And they're going to want to kill it, so you're going to want to draw probably 2 copies of it every game.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. If you get stuck with the other copy in your hand, you're probably winning, because it means your opponent's not killing your stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Oh. And if anything, you can just roll the second copy out there and get a 1/1 with training.
Yeah. Okay, then the other one I want to look at is Voice of the Blessed. White for a 2/2 spirit cleric. Whenever you gain life, put a +1/+1 counter on Voice of the Blessed. As long as Voice of the Blessed has 4 or more +1/+1 counters on it, it has flying and vigilance. As long as it has 10 or more, it has indestructible. This is just another, like, Sarah's Ascendant for the white Soul Sisters decks in Historic, and it's absolutely going to see play in there.
It's just a better version of a Johnny Spreadmate.
Yeah, but they'll play all of the above is the problem. Those decks are just nuts.
Yeah. Like, it's a better Johnny Spreadmate because it's got better typing, and it also just, like, has keywords when it gets big enough. So, yeah.
You know what? This, I think more than anything, this will replace the four Ajani's Pride Mate, and then those Ajani's Pride Mate will probably, they'll probably be fighting the Ajani Planeswalker for positioning in that deck too, because you'd rather just have, you know, creatures on two that can do it. So I don't know. I don't have any experience with that deck, but I've just been rolled over by those cards. And if you can't find the removal fast enough, or if you're playing red and you have to do damage to creatures to kill them, you get rolled over by a Johnny's Primate in like 2-3 turns. Those guys are big time with a bunch of Soul Sisters. So this card is a big deal.
Great.
And then one more rewind here. Maniform Hellkite. What do you think of this guy? 2 red for a 4/4 flying. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, create an XX red dragon illusion creature token with flying and haste, where X is the amount of mana spent to cast that spell. Exile the token at the beginning of the next end step.
No deal.
Yeah. It's obviously a good card. It doesn't seem to really be doing anything terribly unique.
It's doing something pretty unique in that, like, it's turning your spells into, like, this output of insane amounts of damage. Mm-hmm. But it's just, like, it's making tokens that don't stick around, and, like, they're not going to be that big. Because, realistically, you're not casting 5, 6, 7 mana spells to take a, like, chunk out of your opponent. You're combining these types of cards with, like, Ponders.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think the turning your non-creature spells into outputs of damage is kind of covered by the egg, the 2-mana egg that will flip into a 4/4. And then also we've got, like, you know, different variations on that, and like Arclight Phoenix and Thing in the Ice and things like that that do it in a very different way, but are like much lower to the ground in terms of mana cost, and then don't demand that you're playing, you know, like you said, 4 or 5 mana spells for big payoffs, and it just can get those little chip shots in there. So this guy can be dealt with much easier, and like maybe you play a Ponder and get him for 1, and then you're like, oh yeah, then they just killed my creature with a sorcery on their turn, and it's like, that was not worthwhile. So okay, Concealing Curtains, 1 black mana for a 0/4 wall. It's got Defender. You can pay 2 and a black and transform it as a sorcery. It transforms into a menace 3/4. When you flip it into this Revealing Eyes, what it's called, target opponent reveals their hand, you choose a non-land card from it. If you do, that player discards that card, then draws a card. So again, it's a 0/4 for 1, pay 3, and flip it into a 3/4 with menace that basically thought seizes the opponent, and then they get to draw a replacement card.
Yep. Pretty good.
And the creature type is an Eye Horror, by the way.
Don't know if that's going to do anything for us, but...
Yeah. I just basically letting you know that it's not relevant. Because it's not a zombie, it's not a vampire, it is an Eye Horror. So, I don't know, I think this card is cool. 0/4 for 1 black is, like, at the very least worth looking at as a sideboard card to, like, just stave off the attacks from, like, goblin guys and things like that. But I don't know if you're looking for this in Modern, anyway.
No, I don't think so.
All right, let's just do a couple more. That one for me is kind of like it just exists, but I do like it.
Yeah. Yep.
A couple more for today, and then we'll finish up the bunch next time. Is there anything in this grouping, Daryl, that you want to look at? It's still in Friday, October 29th, before we move on.
No, I'm just trying to see where I want to go next. None of that's appealing to me. You can continue.
What's that?
You can continue. None of that 29th stuff is appealing.
Okay. Valorous Stance reprint is cool for Historic. I think that's a good card. I don't think that is... Maybe it's already in Historic. In fact, I think it is. So maybe that's not relevant, but it is a good card for Standard.
I think you bypassed a card that I think will be very good for Standard.
Which is?
Which is Investigator's Journal.
Yeah, go on.
So it's 2 mana for an artifact clue. Investigator's Journal enters the battlefield with the number of suspect counters on it equal to the greatest number of creatures the player controls. Pay two, tap it, remove a suspect counter from investigator's journal, draw a card. Pay, and then it's actually just a clue. Pay two, sacrifice it, draw a card.
I didn't realize it was a clue. That's clever.
Yeah, it's also a clue, yeah. Huh. So this is like a big-time card advantage for like your mid-range decks because, you know, you get two or three creatures in play and you can invest some mana over turns to like have a Phyrexian Arena. And then like it's just a clue when there's no more counters on it. You also just get the last card. You get to cash in for a redraw. So like it could be, you know, like a draw two or three in your creature deck.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It reminds me of the journal, the what's the one that Eldrazi Tron plays that costs two? You tap to scry.
Maze Mind Tome.
Maze Mind Tome, yeah, that one. That one's cool. Like two mana artifact, card advantage. It costs two to draw. This one doesn't have like a free activation option. Everything costs two to do it. So there's that. Yeah. But the payoff is like obviously much greater and draw a card. I realistically, you're probably gonna get three counters on here, right? So you're gonna draw four cards off of this. That's a lot of cards.
Yeah, it is.
So yeah, it's a good card. Good
like,
point.
Even if you play it as a sideboard card in your like white, like mono white aggressive deck. Mm-hmm. And you just go like one drop, two drop this thing. It's a draw two over turns like after you're done applying pressure, or like you've got your pressure in play and your opponent's got to do like deal with it. You play this, you get three or four cards saved up on it, and then as your opponent deals with your pressure, like you can apply more pressure. And then when you have turns down that like you're not under pressure to like put more stuff in play, you can just recoup your cards.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool.
If anything along those lines with like small creatures that bounces an artifact or a permanent, like you can generate a lot of card advantage here.
Yeah, good point. Or like just blinks it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that too.
By the way, Luris would be good friends with this guy.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Didn't consider Ooh. That. But yeah, it comes back and that is the ultimate right there, isn't it?
Huh. I like that.
Okay, all right. This card's a big deal. I like this a lot. You've convinced me. You've sold me.
Yeah, I don't know how much modern play we're gonna see it have, but like I definitely think standard playable and historic playable for sure.
No, I could see modern play. I mean, like the creature decks are interested in this. Like that's value for them. But I can't imagine like the control decks are going to want it because it's not reliable card advantage for them when they're trying to deal with creatures and keep them off the board. You don't want to top deck it when the board's empty.
No. This is definitely a card that plays with Luris or like in the artifact shells.
Yeah. It kind of like just keeps you going if you've already got the gas, but it doesn't like solve problems if you're like just digging for an answer. I mean, you can cycle itself, but it's not great.
Yeah, it's not a great rate for cycling itself.
All right. Let's check out one more today, and then we'll pick up on October 31st cards when we come back next time. Cemetery Protector, unless there's anything else in this date that you want to look at.
Fire away.
Okay, Cemetery Protector is 2WW for a human soldier. It is a mythic, and it is... I said it was a creature, human soldier. Yep. It has flash. It's a 3/4. When it enters the battlefield, exile a card from a graveyard. Whenever you play a land or cast a spell, if it shares a card type with the exiled card, create a 1/1 human creature token.
I mean, landfall make a 1/1 on your 4 mana flash is already good.
Yeah. So there's like a Myria Angel back in the day that did basically this. This one has the exile a card from a graveyard, so there's like a little bit of extra utility where this can like just deal with problems too.
Yep.
Someone mentioned, what if you target your Dryad Arbor out of your own graveyard or out of your opponent's graveyard if you're really lucky, but out of your own graveyard? I mean, cast a creature spell, put a land into play, you get double functionality. I mean, that's pretty nice. I think there's a lot of setup for something that maybe isn't completely necessary, but that could be very good.
Right? From, like, if you exile a creature, you just, like, playing lands still triggers this guy anyways. It just says lands on the card.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it would certainly work.
Well, I mean, you don't need to do the extra work. You can just exile any old creature, right? Like,
yeah, but if you do Dryad Arbor, you get both, is what I'm saying. So you play a land, get a creature, or play a creature, get a creature.
You literally don't need to, because it says on Cemetery Protector, when you play a land.
Yeah, if it shares a card type with the exiled card.
Right, so
if the exiled card is just a creature, when you play a land, it doesn't do anything.
Got it. I now understand.
But like, fetch lands make it really easy to get. I mean, your opponents can have fetch lands just as often as you are.
I see. Okay, I was not reading the card effectively. My brain is, I'm very hungry and my brain is not working. So like, yeah, okay, I see. So you get exile land and then you just have a Mirian Angel functionally. Okay, I see. That's acceptable, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a decent card. I don't think it's a game changer. It's like 4 mana for a 3/4. It doesn't do enough, but good card. If Historic had some fetches, that would be a thing to look at. Probably good enough for Standard. But I don't know. I think you're gonna need some Anthem effects to go with it for it to really like be effective.
Take off.
Yeah. So I like it, but it's just an
Agreed.
All right. With that, I think we should pause on this now and come back to the remainder of these spoilers for next time. But I don't know. We looked at some powerful stuff today. Are you convinced that this is a pretty good set?
I mean, it's pretty decent. Like, I'm not offended about that they're wasting my time by printing it, you know?
All right, good, good. All right, I think we're coming around a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Take it easy, everybody.
Goodbye.
Modern Metacall is a production of CarnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with Cardnock Life offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading Cardnock Life content.